Well, hello, everyone. It is another Focus podcast. So glad to have you here with me, Singing Lisa. I am your host. And of course, you know, we've been featuring great people who are part of our frontline workers with this COVID-19 experience that we're all in together. We know we've heard that a lot. And I want to introduce to you another fantastic individual named Craig Jason Nicholson. Oh, now he's going to tell us why he has so many names. But, you know, in New Orleans, we're not too afraid of that. We're accustomed to that, but we are excited to have him here. He is the director of palliative care at West Jefferson Medical Center and Hospital. And so, Craig, thank you so much for joining us. And how are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes. Well, please tell us about this unique name that you have and what's the story behind that?
I wonder if at some point my parents were just wondering if they gave me so many names, they were just going to see how long it took me to be able to spell them all. So they just kept adding.
The full alphabet, right?
They did.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we are happy to have you here. Thank you for taking time out of your busy work schedule. And, of course, you know, let us know a little bit about your background and how you ended up, not only in New Orleans, but in the profession that you're in.
Great. I was born in Yiberia, Louisiana, and basically grew up in Pensacola, Florida, and basically kind of found myself up through Texas, became a nurse, and then came back down south where my family was at, and came to New Orleans in 2002 as a registered nurse at West Jefferson Medical Center. And eventually I went back to get my nurse practitioner degree at Loyola University, graduated in 2009 and stayed at West Jefferson. Initially I was part of a family practice called Family Doctors, and I had a smaller clinic outside in a small town called Lafitte, Louisiana, and then came back into the hospital. I was led to, had some very good role models that turned me on to palliative care, and have been in it for 3 years now.
Well, that is a special area, and you definitely provide a much needed, I want to say extra level of care, because it goes beyond the physical, really into the emotional and the mental, and just that really extra special care that someone needs when they're in that particular state. And so I know that has to be challenging. And then while you're already doing that extra, here comes COVID-19. So Where were you when you first started hearing about it, and what was the what was your mindset?
I was at the hospital. My spouse and I both practice here. My spouse is an OBGYN, and so we're a little bit on the different spectrums of what we do. And initially, when everyone had started talking about COVID, we had kind of started taking in little pieces of it, and we're kind of watching and waiting, and had almost just started becoming numb to the conversation of every time you turned on the television, it was COVID. Mm-hmm. And we basically were just letting it trickle in, and it caught us a little bit by surprise, to tell you the truth. I relate so many things to hurricanes, because it's kind of what it felt like, to tell you the truth. You know, we hear warnings about something out in the Gulf or something here and there, and then nothing comes up. And right. here you bought gas for your generators and 12 gallons of water that nobody's going to drink. And it seemed like that was what happened down here. We, you know, we're kind of used to some false alarms that it started trickling in, but then all of a sudden, it came in with a punch.
Yeah.
And, you know, panic mode.
Yeah. So what were some of the changes you guys immediately had to put in place when all of this became a real threat and a real reality?
Well, especially with palliative care, a big piece is family interaction, because a big part of our practice is end of life. Well, end of life, especially, you know, patients Yes. Did we have patients that were intubated and sedated that wouldn't have been able to take part in a conversation? Of course. But we had several family members that were here in the hospital, husbands and wives, maybe different parts of the hospital, and one was sicker than the other. And all of a sudden, we were missing a piece, and it was that emotional and physical connection, because we get to the bedside and we hold hands and we try to explain everything going on, and we lost a huge piece. And we could do video chats, we could do phone call, but nothing can replace someone holding your hand while you're hearing news. And it's very hard. And we, all of a sudden, instead of having family meetings around a patient's bed, it was by a phone, which felt, it wasn't personal.
Right.
It felt cold. And as you can see right now, I talk with my hands. I hug people all day long.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
detachment.
Complete detachment. And, you know, you have a mask. And I will tell you, my expression is here, down. And all of a sudden, if you lose it, you know, you can talk with your voice and you know, yes, have different tones of up and down. But your eyes can be expressive to an extent, but not being able to touch someone and talking, it, we had to retrain ourselves.
Wow.
On trying to show a little bit more emotion using this part and trying to, you know, get across the feeling of warmth through electronic devices. And that was a challenge.
That is really a great way to explain how that changed for you. And I'm thinking of other creativity that probably had to be in place, where not only were your eyes having to be more expressive, but your wording had to be probably more descriptive so that people would actually understand with a little better clarity and relatability what you were trying to get across.
You are so correct, because I remember when I went home that first day, and everyone knows what it's like to have made a difference in someone's life. It feels good. And I left that first day not knowing, did I make a difference? Did I make something worse? And this is something that I feel like I'm good at. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, reality was, I don't know. And I felt helpless leaving work. And I remember looking in the mirror that evening and putting my mask on in a mirror and trying to have a conversation to have additional movement that wasn't a natural thing for me. My movement is usually here. And having to change up to be able to show a different expression, and that was hard. You know, but trying to retrain myself, that was a lot.
That was a lot. My goodness. And then you're a two-person household in the medical field. And so I'm sure your conversations had to be just engaging in so many ways, really probably a new discovery on, you know, what else you could do to improve the circumstance. And so now you're dealing with, you know, trying to communicate, trying to continue providing care, but now you've got these extra steps to follow to be safe, to keep other people protected. And so were there immediate changes besides adding the mask and obviously I'm sure hand sanitizer? What other changes were more immediate for you all to function?
Well, it's definitely when it came to PPE, we don't, at our hospital, we really don't have these big horror stories of not having supplies. We had them, which is a blessing. Yes. But when you have to start putting on masks, goggles, and gowns, you lose a human aspect of you, because if you thought you weren't approachable before, you really are not approachable at that point, because do we wear that equipment sometimes even prior to this? We do, mm-hmm. but it's for smaller little periods of time.
Sure.
You're in outfits that you're not used to wearing all of the time. And anyone can tell, you know, whether it's a lady in a good old pretty pair of high heels or a guy with a shirt that's way too tight and we're sucking in our belly. It's, you can tell if someone is comfortable in something. And no one was comfortable in this stuff. And it doesn't take very long, especially when you are trying to work with patients and family, and you're not comfortable in your own self because of what you're having to wear. And it scares the patients. And with them being scared, it scares us back. Wow. And it was a definite learning experience. And then you get done and you can use precautions, and we were washing our hands and using so much hand sanitizer. I mean, our skin was breaking in between our fingers. Yeah. And you drive home and you're like, oh my gosh, could I have just brought this home to my kids?
Oh, yes.
And so the same precautions you're taking at the hospital, granted, we don't have PPE at our home, but, you know, showering in temperatures that are much warmer than what you prefer, and, you know, using soap that literally, I mean, it's just drying everything out, but it affected everything from top to bottom.
Mm. Wow, that is such a story that we've heard, you know, time and again, of just the constant adjustments, the unsure, you know, information, just not knowing, are you making the right steps, the right moves, and am I hurting or am I helping? My goodness. And from moment to moment, you go through these types of thoughts because you're dealing with something that's invisible that you don't even know at the time, at the height, how it's even traveling or getting in. So there's just this mystery. So a lot of uncertainty around what you were doing and in your environment and then your home environment. And so, you know, we still find ourselves in somewhat of that type of situation, even today, three months or so into it, because we're still getting surprises about where it's popping up and how it's growing and developing and showing up in people. So, now, how was the atmosphere besides the fear, I'm sure, that was surrounding you all? Did you end up having some patients that became positive? And then what changes did you have to do at that point?
It seemed like when it came into our hospital, I feel like from administration all the way down, I feel that they came together and enacted a plan and brought in several, you know, key ideas that we had taken from the people that had gotten infected first. And so we put some pieces together, but we learned, unfortunately, every single day that those same things that we thought were going to work, 2 days later, this is not protocol. This is what needs to happen. And it was changing in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had how they started presenting, they did trickle in. It's not like I came to work and all of a sudden, a huge portion of the hospital. It wasn't. We had some patients come in and they were very sick and they were in the critical care units. And so during that time, though, we were able to make plans of having an entire unit. And so it gave us a little bit of time to plan. But one of the things that I pride myself on is being able to educate. And families were like, well, why is this happening? We don't know. And anything, and most people, we like 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah.
And all we had was the number 4. We did not know what led up to it. And as time, everyone was talking about prevention and everything. And even my 7-year-old asked me, she goes, well, why can't y'all just stop it? Mm. And I'm like, baby, yes. We want to so bad. We want to.
Yes.
And it just kept coming in, and you learn real fast. You better roll with punches.
Learn as you go, because you've got to keep up and you don't want to get left behind and end up in a worse scenario, because everybody is having to deal with brand new information and situations. But as you said, really almost momentary, because every day something different happens, but then throughout the day something was developing, and just trying to learn and keep up with new methods, new practices, hearing about what might work better in one situation. So it's literally, I know you've heard as well, people have said it's been like being on a MASH unit. Because it was literally boots on the ground trying to survive and help everybody else make it as well.
Yeah. Well, and the thing we usually just, and I keep bringing up hurricanes, and this is when you can tell I'm a Southern boy. Usually hurricanes come, places are affected, but we keep them involved with everything going on, you have to cut it off at some point. And so we'd stop watching the news with hurricanes, because you have to have some kind of normalcy. Yes. And your children, they still have to be children. But what started affecting even my house is, because things were changing so quick, you had to keep the news on, because I was always looking at my iPad in one hand and my cell phone in another hand, because we were getting alerts from our hospital. I'm getting alerts from the CDC. They're saying something that had just changed, maybe in New York or wherever. And even my children, my daughter was sitting there and she wanted to watch SpongeBob so bad. And I'm like, baby, this is
a little more important right now.
It is. And things are changing so quick that we have to keep up from every side. Mm-hmm. You just had to keep up.
Wow. And then you mentioned your children. Let's not talk about, you both are working and now you're at home homeschooling. Oh, yes. A new adventure. It just said, wait. That is chapter 2.
I feel like, and I think I've got some good kids, but unfortunately, my kids, they're active, they're loud, they're kind of like me. And both of my kids are adopted, and God made sure to... maybe it's a good thing or a bad thing. My louder, obnoxious qualities were just smack dab in both of my kids. And so all of a sudden, I can only imagine doing, these teachers. I feel like I personally should call them. I apologize. I don't know. Because I realized real quick that trying to juggle work and come home and put on a different hat
My goodness. Or wear them at the same time. Oh, my goodness. I'm pretty sure.
I will tell you, and this is a fine example of what our teaching abilities were. And we're very close with our children. My boy's 14 and my daughter's 7. Usually, especially from a little girl, we get several Father's Day cards. We get all these little things and stuff. Well, Father's Day came, you know, still right smack dab in the middle of all of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember my daughter, I was like, look, hey, for Father's Day, my spouse is a man, so we have two Father's Day, you know, on the same day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, look, don't forget for your dad. And they call me daddy. I was like, get, you know, start doing some cards and stuff. And I was like, I can get you glue, glitter, everything. And my daughter was like, I just need a pencil. I was like,
that's it?
Yeah. But you know, it was an adjustment for everybody. And it's but the kids, they got hit hard.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. We at least got to leave the house, mm-hmm. and we were able to have conversations with people experiencing the same thing, mm-hmm. and talking about, oh, homeschool, this is killing me. What are y'all doing? And you know, I had my two kids at home, mm-hmm. that my daughter doesn't FaceTime.
Okay.
And you know, my brother, or her brother is 14. He would, you know, he's only going to spend so much time with a 7-year-old sister. And I'm going to tell you, it was, mm-hmm. that was a huge.
Another new territory.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know another adjustment, just seemed like how could this be? And I've heard that so much now that teachers have just risen to the ranks. I think we're all at the top now.
It's, I'm telling you, when now, you know, things are getting a little bit more open, and when families will come in or something like that, before you know it, someone has hugged you or things like that. And I tell all of them, someone will be like, well, I'm a school teacher. And I'm like, it's taking everything for me not to go over there and hug you and just tell you, oh, you don't get paid enough.
Yes. So. Well, such a, you know, another area that has been so challenging. And so everyone, you are in tune to the Focus Podcast, and we're having just the greatest conversation with, I think you told me I can call him CJ. This is Craig. And so CJ has just been giving us all the tea, as they say, with everything happening from all perspectives. And so I know CJ has got to be just shocking for some people. Have just, wait a minute, who are these children? And what happens at school when I'm not there? Because it's just been such an eye-opening experience for people.
I tell you, I'm Catholic. And I can tell you, in just short spurts of amount of time, I'm like, oh, who is this child? And I can't believe I've sent her out in public. I'm like, what do these people think about me?
Oh, my goodness. Well, know? I know everyone can relate. Because it's just been, I don't think there's been any area that has been untouched that had to be revamped or redone, looked at again, and your hands are just up with question marks, like, what are we supposed to do? So, and what I love about the part that is happening is that the technology has allowed everyone to stay connected, which is different from Katrina or any massive hurricane that has disconnected people, because even though there is the lack of the touch element, at least we are in, you know, safe settings where we have food, we have lights, we have communication with our loved ones, knowing what their whereabouts are, which is a huge game changer to all that happens right now.
Yeah. Yes.
And so when it came to the separation of the patients that you have, as we sort of just navigate back there for a moment, how was it when you had people, they had to learn new technology when it came to the virtual, phone calls and they had birthdays, they had certain celebrations or certain times when, you know, families would come and want to be with them. So how was that adjustment? Did the staff have to rally together to make it work?
It's, I'll be honest how some of the other departments functioned with it. I don't know. It some of it almost seems like a blur. And with an older population and trying to talk, you know, I would call families and say, hey, I'm going to call you tomorrow. I'm going to be at your husband or wife's bedside. And we're going to use Zoom. We're going to use, you know, whatever they have. I mean, some of them I would even talk about FaceTime if they had an iPhone. And trying to explain that over a telephone with someone 80, 90 years old, and they're like, I don't even have a cell phone, never needed one. And it's, you know, you try to work through it. I, you know, some people would bring me up, I would have them meet me in the parking lot. They'd hand me their phone, and I would set the app up and everything on it. And then I'd let them know I'm going to call you tomorrow, and this is the button you've got to push. You know, and then there was other ones, it just wasn't going to happen. So I'd meet them in the parking lot. I'd give them my cell phone, and I would say, this is the password. Push this button. I'm going to call you from my iPad in the room, and you make it work.
Yeah.
But it would take a normal, you know, 8-hour day.
Yeah.
And it would turn into 14, 16 hours very quick because you do what you have to do because it's, you know, I always see someone in bed and I think, gosh, if here I'm at this hospital, but what would I do if my mom or my daddy was at another hospital and I couldn't physically, I would hope, you know, somebody would work with me if I didn't know what to do. Yeah. And you make it work. Yeah. You just make it work.
Well, above and beyond is just, you know, we can't say that enough. We know that that has happened in this setting that you're in because it's just life and death, and you're actually dealing with the end part of that process. And so that is already a special area, very, you know, tender for people to have to deal with. They're facing a lot already, and then to have more separation at a time when you want to be together, and when that really is so more so very important. And so, how was the mood of your coworkers when, you know, from day to day you've got all of this urgency happening and all of these changes? And I know lately the talk has increased more and more about the mental health of everyone. What take us through a moment when you had to maybe help a coworker, or what was that exchange like?
You walked around the hospital and it was almost a little like shell shocked, to tell you the truth. It's people were functioning and working to their maxed out ability, almost like a machine. It seemed like in the beginning, it was the weeks and weeks later where you started seeing little cracks about the reality of everything going on. Because like I said, in the initial part of it, it came real quick like a punch. And you go into this self-driven mode to accomplish something without thinking. You're functioning. And it's like after your body has been at that functioning level, you can only function as a machine for so long before that starts kicking in and reality starts setting in on, oh my goodness, One, you know, anybody can get that 100% and you're just working it out like a beast. Your body shuts down at some point. Mm-hmm. And that same kind of fight or flight mode you're going with, it has to start declining at some point. And that's when the emotional part came up, because you didn't know where the end was. And at some point, it's like, can I keep functioning at this level? And I could walk around the hospital and tell where you're going to start seeing some cracks, and people that are usually super talkative and things like that starting to get a little bit more quiet, starting to kind of need to walk away from the unit for a second, because reality was hitting very hard. And it's that's where the emotional it started coming out. Mm-hmm. It started coming out. That was where, I will tell you, Dr. Akula, he had Leah, one of his employees, reached out to me and told me, look, here's a number. You tell your people, hey, if you need to talk to somebody, if you need something. And I tell you, that was a beautiful outlet, because anything in the medical profession, especially during, you never want to show your weakness, mm-hmm. especially during this. Yes. And to be able to have an outlet of something that was not affiliated directly in-house, mm-hmm. you know, because people will usually talk to me, mm-hmm. but it wasn't the normal conversations. Right. And they needed an outlet. And mm-hmm. and Dr. Akula, I tell you, that was a beautiful thing, mm-hmm. that he had put in place.
Yes, and it still is going on today and proving to be very necessary and helpful for a lot of people. And so we'll definitely yep. show that number as well, because yep. we're passing please. The message on to anyone who needs to speak with someone who has any mental concern. It is not weakness to reach out mm-hmm. to get the support you need from someone who will understand or who will just listen. And yes. that is life, because it makes a difference in for you to continue doing what you do. And so now here we are 3 months or so into it. And as you said, you know, the crisis part, the hard hitting part is basically coming to a different, you know, level. And so how is the atmosphere and how are things these days? And the kids are sort of, you know.
Yeah. Getting into the new baseline. You know, well, with the mental support, Akula was kind of the first one that had given people an outlet. Then our hospital started coming in and having programs. We started seeing, you know, even on the news, look, this is a big piece, and yes. it needs to be addressed. So there started to become more avenues. Spirituality was such a huge piece. Mm-hmm. And the fact that churches had closed doors, that was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Understandable, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but when you then, you know, that's usually where people, myself included, I turn to a higher power when I don't feel like I've got control. And I can say prayers all day in my car, in my house, at work, but it's a different feeling when I'm actually in church, and it's just a connection. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you, even though our church was having a live stream from just the priest and a couple of key players there, you're still at your house, and it was a disconnect. Mm-hmm. And it's something I never thought would ever happen, that our churches,
like, are you serious?
Yes. I never, you know, whenever they were, you know, it's coming across at the news, mm-hmm. and they're like, you know, churches will not, are not allowed to open. I was like, did they really just say that? Because mm-hmm. I consider churches almost like hospitals. They got to be open for everything, holidays, weekends.
You said it.
Got to be 24/7 accessibility.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
when that closed down, it's, you know, South mm-hmm. Louisiana, and I've been all over the United States. There is something about being in the South mm-hmm. and spirituality down here. It is key.
Yeah.
It is key. Yeah. And we lost another avenue,
yes.
of where to leave work.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't in your house. You know, you had your house, you got kids screaming, and somebody wants food, and, you know, trying to get kids to take a shower because yeah. they're a teenager, and mm-hmm. who knows, mm-hmm. and all of that. You can at least, previously, you go to a church. Let it all go. You have that hour of, you could kind of recenter.
Yeah.
And we lost it.
Yes. Well, it has been a discovery for the entire world, because everything we knew has changed. And one thing I will say, that everything we learned in kindergarten, though, has still maintained to be true. Wash your hands.
Oh.
Can we go back?
I, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, they're putting out flyers and stuff like this. And yes. and all of a sudden, people are like saying, you know, well, yeah, you really got to wash your hands. And I'm like, what have y'all been doing? Because
I learned it. It actually still works.
It does.
It really does. So
the basics, and you start and you learn real quick. You hygiene.
Yes.
I think we took it for granted.
Yes.
For the longest time.
Yes.
And I, you know, hand sanitizer went quick.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, people bought that up so fast. And people, you know, in work, outside of work, everybody was like, we have no hand sanitizer. And I'm like, this is at their house. And I'm like, well, you have soap, don't yes. you? That's.
Yeah, that stock really rolls for that one, I tell you. It's talk about a precious commodity.
Correct. Who would have thought? I had more samples between hospice companies, drug reps. I had more sample sizes of hand sanitizer, probably expired.
What do you see as our outcome? Because we're still dealing with this. We've got upticks going on, but I don't know if that affects your area as much because of the care that you provide at this stage of their life. But what is your optimism in terms of where we are going forward?
I think with every tragedy, you can do one of two things. You can learn from it, embrace it, and grow together stronger, because we all went through this, everybody.
Yes.
And move together as one whole, you know, a unity. And or it's going to be fractured. And I think, and I can feel it, even at my own hospital, groups that, you know, everybody has to function together. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you're getting up to the floor to do your job, whether it be to pass out food trays, and maybe you're not usually stopping at the nurse's station to just say hi. You're trying to get the trays passed out. It seems like people have kind of stepped back a little bit, and they're talking. And people are starting to learn names, you know. People, they've always known me as CJ, but it's amazing the number of people that know that CJ is Craig Jason. Because you're taking it back, because you become more of a family. You went through a tragedy, and I think I see beautiful things moving forward, though. I really do. I think we are going to move forward more unified. I think we, not only, yes, do we come to work and it's a job, but probably much like you, we spend just as much time at our jobs as we do at home with our own families. And I think there's more of a family feel. And I love that. I love it. And I hope we hold on to that and continue to move forward, because COVID, it's not gone. Right. We don't know how long. It's a bit of a roller coaster, you know, because we're seeing peaks and then it drops back down a little bit and then another peak and then we get teased a little bit because it goes back down. And but it seems like now we're riding the roller coaster together. And I love that feeling. I love it.
Well, you said it. And I think it is that unity that everybody is experiencing now. And we're actually getting to know one another. So it has become necessary. And it's a good thing, because it's helping everybody survive and really thrive, because we're realizing that we really are in this together, that we really are more alike than we are different. And so it's making a difference, and hopefully, you know, bringing that unification that is so desperately needed across cultures and across people who are all different for reasons, you know. And so it's just been great talking to you. And
thank
I do
so much.
Definitely want to say that we are praying that, you know, better days and better health is ahead for you and your family and everyone at the hospital. And so please, you know, let them know that they're heroes. All of us are. And we're continuing to support and lift and highlight what everyone is doing. And so let them know that it matters. And we appreciate all that you do as well.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. When I see you in person, I'm going to hug you.
Oh, yes. We are looking. We all have hug tickets that we have to cash in.
Yes, I agree 100%. You said something, and it's so true. The people talk about healthcare heroes and all of this stuff. And I tell you, from the people that are just delivering pizza to all across the board, to get and bring pizza to somebody's house, to just do stuff that I think we over, you know, it sounds bad to say, almost overlooked things.
Absolutely.
I know we ordered pizza not long ago, and the guy, when he came up, I was like, long day at work, and the fact with all of this mess going on, you don't know what neighborhood you're going to, whatever it is. This pizza, you have no idea what that has done.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And I tell you, I think it has opened our eyes up. I think it's going to be a good thing. I do.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I'm right there with you. And I want to say thank you again. And hopefully we can revisit and do some post-COVID conversation.
Yeah, I would love it. I would love it.
Oh, yes. Well, everyone, this has been another Focus podcast. And of course, we want you to share this. We want you to go and like and subscribe and do all the things that make everybody know that we are here and we're passing along positive messages. And so I'm singing Lisa, and I want to say thank you so much again to CJ. And for all the great work that you are doing, we appreciate you. And until next time, everybody, y'all stay focused.